the end of every journey, there'll be friendly people waiting. California, good my homie, though I loved her timber mountains, worked her fields and worked her orchards, up and down her central valley. I have driven open highway through the golden Utah Valley, and I've watched the river gently gliding. I wave my hand to friendly people. California, good not only, though I loved her timber mountains, worked her fields and worked her orchards, up and down her central valley.
Folks who know me call me a drifter. They don't know I'll stop my rambling. They don't know that someday, somewhere somebody's gonna make me settle down.
I'm going home, Laura. I'm going home. I'm going home, Laura. I'm going home. Well, no matter where I wander, I know I'll always find a welcome at the end of every journey.
Yeah, I love it. that was your bed for four feet away. Thank you, my dear. You are thankful for the water, no spillway. When we wanted to go to the street, we put the skates on our shoes and get up outside of it. No one, everyone cares about that. I don't think anyway. I mean, if I want to get an eye roll out of people, I just talk about stuff like that, my niece and nephew, and they start, you know, making gagging noises and heading to the door.
What? I think there's a difference here, Wayne, too. I think a lot of people, I've read a lot of self-published stuff by people, and I think a lot of it is important to get the word out. But like you said, when you think about publication and selling what you write, you need to put a little bit more effort into it.
Well, yeah, and, you know, there's whole groups of people that prey on new authors, prey on the dreams, their hopes, and try to sell stuff to big bestsellers, and you're right, I mean, that's a part of it. If your work doesn't have presence, and it's short, it's, you know, I give a seminar one time, but it's got a wrap on the strength, and, you know, you may have written a book, but if your book sucks, you're not going to sell.
Right.
And if it had sales, then I swear to God, I would have been able to sell. It's true, you know, and so what I did is that,
then when I put my book out there myself, slam artist and I'm a slam pianist. And I came to find that there's a whole industry out there that does nothing but scam authors and artists, and they feed on their dreams. You know, somebody writes a book, they want it to be a bestseller. And going back to the point you made, you know, nobody can make your book a bestseller. They can, you know, if your book's no good, it's like a movie that has tremendous publicity, and then on opening day, everybody finds out it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it dies. I mean, it just dies. So, I mean, people have asked me, okay, after all this experience of getting hustled and doing all this stuff, what would you advise people to do to publicize their book?
What would I advise?
What's that?
You say, what would I advise, or what would you advise?
What I would advise people to do three things to publicize their book.
Okay.
The first is to get pre-release reviews. In other words, if you look for a book at a bookstore or online, I'm willing to bet the first thing you do is look at the reviews. And if there's no reviews, or if the reviews all suck, you're not going to buy the book.
Mm-hmm.
So also getting pre-publication reviews, if they're good, allow you to put them on the book's cover and to quote them, you know, as you know, that's number one. Thing number two is to meet up with people like you, my friend Danny, and get on the air with them. Talk about your book, you know, and if it sounds good to the audience, you're going to sell some books. The third thing is press releases. There is a company out there called Send to Press. That's SEND2Press.
Uh-huh.
And I don't own any part of that company. I met them through my work. And they are really good. And for a couple hundred bucks, they'll send a press release out to really major publications. I got responses back from the major magazine of theater and entertainment in New York, for example.
Uh-huh.
And so those are the three things. You want to spend your money on something? Do that. All the rest of it is just...
Now these are things that you found out on your own, I guess, over time, like Wayne, and now you put them all into a book?
Yep. And that's You're an Author, Don't Get Hustled.
Okay.
Available on Amazon. And my memoir that includes things like Shark Fishing in Your Underwear or The Day Johnny Cash Hit on My Wife, that's called Tales from the Day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also available on Amazon.
Let me ask you a question about, the time you pitched an idea to the loan shark, or you pitched the loan shark, is that in the first book?
Oh, yeah, that's in Tales from the Day. And what that was all about is I had a weird friend in the radio business. And
well, I did too. Go ahead.
all you guys in this business.
We're all weird in the radio business.
Yeah. And back in the day, that's what I love about podcasting now. It's like local radio used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Local radio used to be kind of like the Wild West. I mean, people who owned small radio stations, they were the real creative people of their time that do all this weird stuff to build an audience. And so anyway, I had a friend who was in the business, and he got to be kind of famous because he would develop shows like Music by Dead People.
Uh-huh.
You know, he would have his disc jockeys doing these gory details of how the artist died, and then they'd play their music. Getting people went crazy.
Just to put you in the mood.
Yeah, they'd call up and start screaming at the guy. So Frank, his name was, he started a program called Ask the Owner. So people would call up and say, Music by Dead People, how could you do such a thing? And my friend would answer, because I'm the owner. So anyway, he calls me up one day and he said, listen, I got an idea. Now, this guy's ideas are something to run away from. And he said, no, listen, I just bought a little radio station in Las Vegas, and it was what was called a daytimer. They're really small.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very small signal, you have to cut it back at night. But it comes to the city of Las Vegas. So my friend didn't care about anything else. So he called me up and he said, hey, here's my idea. We will not sell advertising for money. We'll sell it for trade. Now, local radio used to do that. If you need meals, if you need a car, you want to take a vacation, you trade it for advertising.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, that you haven't sold anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he said, okay, you come in and help me do this and we'll live like kings. We'll go to the best shows and apartments, drive rental cars, and we won't pay for anything. We'll trade everything. And he sweetened the deal with a little bit of money. So off I went. And I'll tell you, Denny, for a while we did live like kings. Trading advertising for stuff, swag, is a pretty easy sell.
Well, you got to look at it this way, Wayne. I mean, if you make money, you use that money to buy things, and if you can get the things without the money, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah. The only problem is you can't pay your mortgage.
Well, that's true, unless you get them for a sponsor.
Yeah, they don't take swag. You know? Get all this merchandise, and then we'll sell the merchandise for cash. So I went in there, and after a few weeks, my friend calls me in his office, and he says, we're out of money. Well, what a surprise.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we weren't bringing in any money. And he said, I've got this idea. We're going to go sell advertising to Big Jim's bail bonds. Now, Yanni, I was new to Las Vegas, but even I knew that Big Jim was the largest loan shark in all of Las Vegas. And that's saying something.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, honey, you sure you want to be messing around this night? He said, no, it'll be fine. I've even got a sample commercial, I think, for free. So he plays me this commercial. And it was really nice. I mean, they had this great disc jockey voice and nice music in the background. And the commercial basically said, if you get in trouble with the law, to call Big Jim. So yeah, you still there?
I'm here. We were trying to get a call in the middle of the conversation, but I'm going to come keeping you on because I want to hear this story.
Okay. So anyway, we went out to Big Jim's place, and Jim and his son, Little Jim, ran the place, and Little Jim was reputed to be as mean as a rattlesnake, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we got in the conference room, and Little Jim, son, starts in and he says, I don't even know what we're doing here. We don't need to buy any stupid, I'm loosely translating this cursing.
I'm sure, yeah, I thought you might be.
What's that?
I thought you might be. You weren't going to use the words he used.
Yeah. And so my friend Frank says, no, listen, I even made a commercial for you. So the son says, we don't need to hear any stupid, and Big Jim held up his hand and he said, play it. So my friend pushes the button, and instead of the commercial he played for me, out comes my friend's voice, backed by organ music in a minor key, so it sounded like the devil's funeral. And the dialogue went like this. Have you killed your wife? If you have money in the bank, here at Big Jim's bail bonds, we don't care. Hit your mom with an axe? If you have equity in real estate, here at Big Jim's bail bonds, we don't care. Denny, Little Jim jumped out of his chair. I swear to God, his eyes were bulging. I've never seen anybody's eyes bulge before. Hmm. And he started shouting at us, and he stopped. It sounded like his father was strangling, and actually he was laughing so hard. I thought he was going to have a heart attack. So he looked up at us, and he said, oh, man. He said, that took some stones. He said, it was really stupid, but that took some stones. And he said, okay, I'll give you your deal. The year contract, cash in advance.
Wow.
He said, I'll give you your deal, but my conditions are that you give me that commercial, there hadn't better be another copy, and you never run anything on the air that I haven't approved. And my friend said, sure, passed the contract, and Jim signed it off, and I tell you, Jimmy, I thought Big Jim had wanted that contract so he could destroy that commercial, so he could destroy it.
Not be played.
Yeah, But what I was told later was that for years following, Big Jim played that commercial at every party he attended, right up until he went to jail.
Hmm. So you didn't play it on air?
No.
He paid you not to play it.
Yeah. It's sort of like, catch and kill stories in the National Enquirer.
Yeah, right.
So that was Pitching the Loan Shark. It's quite a bit.
Well, let me ask you about the worm. How did the worm wreck your business?
Well, there was when I first got to California, I was so broke, young and broke, and we started doing kind of like commercials for businesses where you'd play slides, and then there would be a pre-recorded soundtrack, talking about the business and the widgets they were producing and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And we were really struggling. And one day, a guy who I'd pitched many times, who was the owner of the largest water sprinkler company in the world, called me up and said, "Wayne, I'll do it. I've always wanted to produce a film on my business. Come on down, we'll get started." And I had visions of a chair with my name on it,
uh-huh.
Cameras rolling and food trucks and all this stuff. I mean, it was a big deal.
Yeah, it was a big time.
Yeah. And this guy had a lot of money. And at the time, I had an assistant who was the son of the owner of a very large company that produced kind of sketchy vitamins and things. They're still in business to this day.
Uh-huh.
But the son went to USC Film School and wanted to go on his own, and I ran across him and I hired him. So before we went to the meeting, I said, "Now listen, when you're going to sign a production contract, never discuss creative ideas before you get the contract and the money. The reason you don't is that after you have the contract and the money, then if somebody doesn't like your creative idea, you just do something else. But if you put an idea out there before you're paid and you have the contract, if they don't like your creative idea, they may not go ahead with you."
Right.
And so the kid said, yeah, I got it. Just keep my mouth shut. Yeah, I got it. So we go to the meeting. I think you'll hire the company, who I really liked, by the way. He was, at that time, an older gentleman.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "I built this company over 40 years. I dreamed of doing this the whole time." And he said, "Let me get your contract signed. We'll give you your check, and let's get going." So he takes the contract. Then he signs his first name. And then he looks up and he said, "By the way, do you have any ideas what you're going to do creatively on my film?" And I started my normal speech about, "Well, no, we'll bring in a team of writers and a producer,
right,
and we'll kick ideas around, whatever." But my new assistant says, "Yeah, I got an idea." Oh
boy.
Man. Oh, Jenny, my heart just stopped. And I interrupted and I tried to get it back on track. "Hey, now we'll get a team down here." But now the owner's excited, right?
And he wants to hear it.
Yeah. So he says, "No, wait a minute, I want to hear what this young man has to say." Oh, God. So he looks at my assistant and says, "What's your idea?" So this young guy actually gets out of his chair and he starts gesturing and he says, "First, the camera pans to the giver of life on Earth, the sun." And the owner of the company's going, "Yes." And then my young assistant says, "And then we pan down to Mother Earth, the greenery, the life-giving and the owner's going, "Yes, yes." And then my assistant says, "And then we pan below the greenery into the rich soil of the earth. And we go down and down until the camera meets your mascot, the symbol of your business." And the owner goes, "What is it?" And my young assistant responds, "An earthworm."
Earthworm. I thought that was...
Yeah. And so, Danny, you've heard the old joke about dropping dog doo into a punch bowl at a party.
Mm-hmm.
How right after the plop, it it's very quiet.
Right.
Well, it got very quiet, and the owner stared at us, and suddenly he says, "Do you mean to tell me that you think I spent 40 years of my life building a company to be represented by a worm?" That was it.
That was the end of your contract, huh?
No kidding. And Denny, I needed that contract.
Yeah.
I mean, I needed it. It was food money. It was,
So this guy was, he was making this up as he went. But I mean, he apparently didn't have the vision he thought he had.
I guess not. And for the first time in my life, and I still, he had it coming, but I feel kind of bad about it to this day. We got our meteoric rise, became CEO of his dad's vitamin company. And to my knowledge, they never did produce a corporate film.
Okay, I might have lost a little bit there, but the gist of it was you fired this guy on the spot, and then more basically told him he didn't care how he got home, but he later became the CEO of his father's company, the vitamin company. Okay, well, let's jump ahead to the next story, Wayne. I've got on my list about the time you donated the bar to the Salvation Army. That sounds like a good one.
Granddad's farm, pretty much, and we had a technical company, so we had the idea to open tech support in little towns in South Dakota that really needed the work and whatever. So it's a beautiful state. I mean, there's hardly anybody in it, but it's a beautiful place. And so we got a lot on a lake there, and we're thinking about building a little cabin. I mean, just a little cabin. You know, one with the chainsaw bear statue and fishing poles on the wall, right? So we're driving. I blame my wife for this, by the way. We're driving around one day, and we're looking at all these beautiful old houses in South Dakota. And then, you know, the old Victoria said, "Why don't we just buy one of those and move it onto our lake lot?" So, you know, that's how it starts, right? Something innocent like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we found... It was just beautiful. We got some big houses before, and we swore we were never going to do it again. This Victoria is 103 years old, and we had just planned on building a little cabin, and this thing was like 6,000 square feet. It's 100 years old, but it was beautiful. I had a working dumbwaiter for all the floors. I mean, it was a Victorian measurement. So we had to move it, like 80 miles. So there's a local moving company who had turned me onto this thing, and the first step was they got the house off the foundation. And then the officials showed up and said, there's new laws that when you have an open foundation, you have to fill it in so it's level, the whole lot's level. And you can't have anything in the basement, no debris, you can't cover it up. Well, in the basement was, God, it had to be 20 feet, 30 feet long, this antique back bar. And a bar. And you know, how are you going to get that out of there?
Right.
I mean, it was huge. So I thought, I told the clerk, I said, no problem. I mean, we found out it had been winched in there with a big winch pulled by mules, as in the four-legged mule. You know? And I said, no, this is really an opportunity. We'll just call, you know, the local DFW clubs or whatever. And we'll donate it, write it off, you know, for a lot of money, and it'll be great. I called every DFW and Legion club in the state. When they heard the size of that thing, I mean, they started laughing. They said, that thing's longer than our main room where we serve drinks, were you crazy? So I was thinking, man, I'm doomed. So I talked to a friend of mine there, and he said, okay, I'm going to save your sorry, backside. They said, call this guy. And it was the captain of the Salvation Army in South Dakota. And I said, what are you nuts? The Salvation Army was founded partially on not drinking. And you think the Salvation Army's going to take a bar? So just call them. So I called the guy up, and without a moment's hesitation, he said, we'll take it. I'm looking at the phone, and I said, well, 25 feet long and it probably with the back bar, it probably weighs 2 tons. And he says, well, thanks for telling me. Not a problem. I'll bring some help. So the house off the foundation, and the foundation's open, the bar's down there. The day the Salvation Army goes to pick it up, I'm standing there, and here comes a semi-trailer with the Salvation Army on it, and the captain is there in full regalia. You know, they actually have uniforms.
Yeah, I've seen them in uniforms.
And following the Salvation Army semi are two buses that have county jail painted on the side of them.
Uh-huh.
And each bus is packed full of guys in prison garb. So, you know, they let these guys out, and they all jumped down. Probably was the best break they had in days. Jumped down in the hole, and they lifted out this huge bar and back bar and put it in the back of the semi. So I'm standing there, and here's this captain of the Salvation Army, and here's 40 convicts all milling around the hole in the ground. And I Gloria's looking at me, and I'm thinking, well, this is strange. And so I went up to the captain, and I said, mind if I ask you something? And he was pretty anxious to get out of there, but he said, no, go ahead. And I said, wasn't the Salvation Army founded on not drinking? And now you're taking a bar? And he looked at me, kind of grim face, and he looked up at the sky, and he looked back at me, and he leaned over and he said, the Lord works in mysterious ways. And he got in his truck and off they went. That was it.
So you don't know what he really wanted the bar for.
I have no idea. I don't know what to do with it. And then all the convicts jumped back in the bus and went off.
How he got the convicts to come out there and do that. I mean, it's.
I have no idea. I never found out what he did. So about 10 minutes later, all kinds of local cops show up, and they said, we've been getting reports that there were a bunch of prisoners out here on your lot. And I'm, of course, going, what? What are you crazy? I mean, what? What are you talking about? And we moved the house and lived there for years. It's a wonderful place.
Wow, you moved that big, and that big, that was a big house to move, wasn't it? A big, big Victorian, it was a two-story house?
Yeah. It's really quite a process.
Wow.
You know, in California, where I spent a lot of years, you could never, never do it.
No.
But in rural states like South Dakota, it's very common. You know, farmers will sell their land and move to town, and they move their house.
Hmm.
I mean, the owner of the movie company said a lot of the people would just leave everything in it. All the dishes in the cabinet, just
move the whole thing, huh? Wow.
Yeah. They'd say move it to town, and they'd move it, and then the owners would just go in and go to bed. It's just the darnest thing. Right?
Well, this next question, this may not be something you'd like to remember, but I heard that you one time lost $10,000 at the Hollywood sign.
Yeah, another one of our weird episodes. I've been asked, how do you get involved with all that stuff? And mostly, Danny, I think it's a matter of being too dumb to say no. we're using some lasers some of the shows we put on for corporations. They were new then. Yeah, this goes back a few years. And so one day I get a call. That's that little office, you know, and this guy calls up. The Hollywood sign at the time was a wreck. I mean, it was a wreck.
I remember that.
And
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Hugh Hefner, the Playboy guy, threw a big party and raised $250,000 to refurbish the sign. So then CBS jumped on board. Now it's going to be a big special, right?
Mm-hmm.
Live to a third of the country and tape delayed the next day to the rest of the nation. So this guy calls me up and says, hey, you the one with the lasers? Well, I didn't have any lasers, but, you know, I read enough to use. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, listen, we have the contract to do the searchlights on the unveiling of the Hollywood sign for the TV program. And he said, I was thinking, what could be better than to have lasers? And I said, yeah, what could be better? And I'm just the guy to do the job. I didn't have any lasers. There's no power. There's no water at the Hollywood sign, which is on top of a mountain.
I know.
What's that?
I said, I know, and it used to be longer. Didn't it used to say Hollywood Land?
Yeah.
At one time?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was a real estate development.
Mm-hmm.
And then when movies got big, they shortened it. And, run those big lasers at the time, you had to have power, you had to have water. And you had to have the lasers. So I went to the laser company and borrowed two lasers. And the thing was, Denny, at the time, big lasers had like a tube in them.
Mm-hmm.
That if it got too hot or too cold, it would blow up, and they were $5,000 a whack. And so I got those, and then I got a power truck and a water truck on credit. But hey, Denny, this is national TV, right? This is my shot. So off we go. And the night of the show, God, it was so cold. I mean, it doesn't get cold in Southern California, but it was cold that night. And so the show fires up, we're going live, and the pre-show, or part of the show, was live entertainment by a lady named Lola Falana. Now, I never knew her, I met her, but I never knew her, but even not knowing her, I loved that woman. She had her own song, What Lola Wants, Lola Gets.
Yeah, and I think she had a TV show at one time. She's pretty popular, but I couldn't name you one song, you just named one.
Yeah. Won a hunk of the New York Mets in a baccarat game last night, and a few years later sold it for $14 million.
Pretty good investment.
I loved her.
Yeah.
I didn't know her, but how could you not love her, right?
Right.
So she gave a terrific show, and then it was our moment. So they're counting down, we're firing up the lasers, and it started to sleet. Now it never sleets. California, but it sleeted that night, and the sleet was dripping into lasers, so we fired up the first one, and it blew up.
There you go.
And so...
$5,000? Was
yeah,
that... Would it cost you $5,000 when it blew up?
And so my wife and I, we just got married. We're holding umbrellas over the second laser, and I fired that one up, and it emits a couple of little light, and it blows up.
Mm.
So the evening ends with Gloria and I sitting at the base of the letter H on the Hollywood sign, and that's the same letter that an actress by the name of Peg Entwistle
jumped off and
committed suicide in 1932. But it was a beautiful evening. I mean, it cleared, you could see all the lights. And I said to Gloria, my wife, I said, well, we just tanked in front of 15 million people, and we're not going to make any money, but at least we get paid tomorrow. So the next day, now, mind you, I've done all this begging and borrowing, so the next day I called the company, crushing company, and said, oh, I can now pick up our check. And the guy who answered the phone started laughing, and he said, well, good luck with that. They just declared bankruptcy. So, Danny, I had my head in my hands, and I don't remember if I was weeping, but probably. And Gloria came in and grabbed my elbow, and she said, you have got to see this. And she had a copy of the LA Times and had a beautiful picture of light, streams of light over the Hollywood sign. And the story was raving about us. Laser light illuminating the Hollywood sign and a spectacular blah, 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 blah. And what had happened was that when it started to sleet, all the reporters and the crews went into the trailer where there was an open bar, and they all got hammered. They didn't want to stay out there. And so when the moment came, the actual lighting was done by the searchlights of our bankrupt employer, but we got the credit. It was the best review I ever got. We made a lot of money on it.
So there again, you were talking about earlier about how reviews are what make or break you.
Yeah, that's it. That's it exactly.
Well, there's a lot more stories you can tell us. What I'm thinking right now, since I'm getting short on time, is we may wrap this up and then we can come back. Maybe I'll have you on again next week. We'll finish up, talk about some more of your adventures and talk about your book on how to get published and not get taken.
Love.
Would that work with you?
What's that?
Would that work for you?
Absolutely.
And maybe we'll pick a better time. Monday might be a better day for me. If we can maybe talk on Monday and get some things done.
Yeah, as long as it's, I get kind of windows during the day, and I have a family thing I need to do at night, so that's kind of out. But we'll work out the time.
We'll work out the time. But Wayne McFarland, you're an author, you're an expert. You've had a lot of crazy experiences, I guess, but it's all been fun, hasn't it?
It has. And let me do one last one.
Go ahead.
Here we go. The book of these weird experiences called Tales from the Day, available at Amazon, because Amazon sure needs money.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I've got some on there too, you know. So.
The other book is called You're an Author, Don't Get Hustled.
You're an author, don't get hustled.
Yeah.
On Amazon. Okay, Wayne, well, I'm gonna be let you go for today, and I'll be talking to you later.
Thank you. I'll be looking forward to it. I promise to be there when the clock struck 23. Down in the village, just 4 miles out of town. She runs the local tavern, and the liquor's always free. But the pickles sell for 19 cents a pound. Well, she's my lazy. She's black-eyed and she's crazy. Prettiest girl I thought I ever saw. Now her breath smells sweet, but I'd rather smell her feet, for she's my freckle-faced, consumptive Sarah Jane. Be the man of you around the world. Be the man of you around the world. I rode in Ozark, and I'm as happy as a lark. I'm the man who rode the mule around the world. I was born about 10,000 years ago, and there's nothing on this earth that I don't know. I saw Peter, Paul, and Moses playing right around the roses, and I can walk the man that says it isn't so. Be the man of you around the world. Be the man of you around the world. And for Pharaoh's little kiddies, I built all the Pyrenees. I'm the man of the view around the world. Queen Elizabeth, she fell in love with me. We were married in Milwaukee secretly. But I rose up and I shook her and went off with General Hooker to shoot mosquitoes down in Memphis, Tennessee. Be the man of you around the world. Be the man of you around the world. I set the flags a-flying when George Washington quit lying. I'm the man for the view around the world. I'm a very highly educated man. There's not a thing that I don't understand. I've been around so long that I used to sing this song when Abraham and Isaac rushed the can. Be the man of the people around the world. Be the man of the people around the world. Lots of thanks to Wayne McFarland for being my guest on this week's show. And we're still working out all these problems we have, and it may take a while, but I really enjoy coming on the air and presenting this show to all you folks, and I hope you all keep listening. Thank you.